Blog Talk Radio.
The bloom, the swoon, the sugar's on your block. The planets letting flesh in the corners of New York. The ghetto, the meadow, the Mr. Butterflew. The honey bugs dug and licked the honey. For a bit, the lips with the soul and some jazz for your hips. The puff, the buzz, the lips be heavy slick. The mecca get a rush when the beats be very thick. The hands, the feet, the brown baby treat. The femmes fumble loose and drink the doodle juice. The steps, the flams, the planets got damn. The people get a grip with the tape from a jam. A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk. Fat, the cool, cool cat. The psychedelic soul puts the planets on the map. The chic, the love, the far out name. The lack of the funk's the main. Why we came, the boogie gets done. The colors won't run. The funk hits the square, the kids gotta come. The pizza with the pop, the West Wolf stop. The crew after crew that do the grasshop. The true cool is black, the new school is fat. The beats by the ounce, the funk by the pack. The groove is the fix, the jitterbug's fix. Hanging off the butts with the fat soul kicks. That's my nickel bag of funk. My nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk. I said a nickel bag of funk. A nickel bag of funk.
Oh, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk. The wide, the hip. Dig it, it's the trip. The loops, the scene, and the funkifying it. The sounds, the pounds, the stacks, the flares. The baggy, baggy jeans. The naughty, naughty hair. The twinkle in the eye. The kisses live and fly. The crew from the sky. The stuff that gets you high. The action. The work. We goes the whole nine. The papers won't rot. The vapors get got. The streets get the buzz. The funk off your block. The opium groove. The smacked out soul. The kicking it live. The fat gotta roll with my nickel bag of funk. My nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk. A nickel bag of funk.
Yeah, it's a nickel bag of funk. A nick bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk. A nickel bag of funk.
Nickel bag. A nickel bag. Ladybugger hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. Butterfly hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. Doodlebugger hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. DP's always hit you with a nickel bag.
Welcome to Headliners Ball. This show's format gives both authors and audience alike the chance to entertain a deeper discussion regarding a choice selection of poems from the author's catalog of work. Headliners will perform pieces in their intended style. In turn, they will receive encouraging feedback from an all-inclusive panel of late-night poet callers. Additionally, there will be a chance for listeners to inquire about intended meaning, inspiration, nuance, poetic device, and any other details that the author is willing to expand upon. I am your host, Jeremy F., and as always, I am joined by my multi-talented, lovely co-host, Pam Ray, who has such a mastery of disguise that she was able to sneak on as a contestant on Let's Make a Deal no less than a staggering 24 times. If it wasn't for the keen nose of one Monty Hall, she might have made it 36. Pammy, how are you?
Well, exhausted from changing in all those disguises, but, you know, other than that, I am doing great, my friend. As always, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you and other cool poets and, you know, just, delving into and discussing poetry.
I like it. I like it a lot, in fact. This evening, we only have one headliner, but one is well much more better than just none. So would you like to make the introduction, please?
I would be happy to. I would like to welcome Archdoom DeVille to the show. I'm glad you could be here. Welcome, Archdoom.
Hello, everyone, and good evening, and maybe good morning to some of you.
Well, I know it's probably bright and early in your neck of the woods, so we appreciate you cracking a fresh cup of Joe and joining us this morning, Archdoom.
I'm glad to be here.
Now, we have your set list sitting here in front of us, and we're going to take it slow because, like I said, we do have the luxury of time with you this evening to really dive into everything you have to offer. The first one I have on your list is actually from a different poetry website. So not to freak the funk too much, I'm going to skip that one if it doesn't bother you too much. And I'm going to grab one that's on AP just to make sure that we're working and we all get comfortable with the format of everything. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's all right.
Okay. Well, the first poem I have for you is on the boards now. It's Monument to Depravity. And if you go to the Late Night Poets board, you'll see the link on there. You can click it and go ahead and share it with us when you're ready.
Okay. Here we go. Monument to Depravity. The world we built is now a grave, a monument to our known deprave, where darkness reigns and shadows loom, and life is a constant struggle for doom. The structures we made, they crumble still, and the air is filled with the stench of ill. The screams of the dying pierce the night, as our own greed snuffs out the light. We thought we were powerful beyond measure, but now we see the cost of our own pleasure. World that's shattered and forever scarred, future that's bleak and forever marred. The fall of civilization was our own fault. Our own greed was the reason for our assault. We turned on each other with a vicious zeal, and now there is nothing left for us to feel. The cities now a barren wasteland, a place where the only rule is survival demands. Gone are the days of love and compassion, as fear and hatred rule with a deadly passion. Resources dwindle with each passing day as the greedy hoard them and keep them at bay, leaving the rest to suffer and die in vain. World that's forever locked in eternal pain. In this world of darkness and despair, there's no hope of light and no one cares. For the world is now a cruel and savage place, a never-ending cycle of pain and disgrace. So let us look upon our ruins with despair and remember the price of our own welfare. For this is the world that we have created, a bleak, unending future that we have fated. End poem.
Wonderful opening. Wonderful read. I love this. This is going to be a great evening. Go ahead, Pam. You get to start.
Oh, I have to agree. It is going to be a great evening. Great read here. Oftentimes with your poetry, you have a wonderful rhyme and flow that's never forced. I like that this is a classic, you know, science fiction tale, and yet the irony of it is that there used to be a huge separation between science fiction, between the dystopian stories and reality, and there was that huge line, and now the line doesn't seem far apart anymore. It seems like dystopian fantasy, science fiction is becoming more and more of closer to being a reality. I like how this speaks on how a world that has been destroyed because of mankind's greed, because of mankind's lack of love and understanding for each other, even their lack of love and understanding for nature. I really particularly like, we thought we were powerful beyond measure, but now we see the cost of our own pleasure, a world that's shattered and forever scarred, a future that's bleak and forever marred. And I'm curious with this particular poem, what was the inspiration for the poem?
Well, I like to keep it simple, and I like to talk about things that happen in our everyday. And it's something I see more and more people are going into social media to live their days, and they're not connecting with each other. And for me, this is something which is turning the world to a place and on the road to somewhere where we don't have any connection to each other. And we're depriving ourselves of our humanity. And I just needed to find a way to get that out of me. And I like to keep things dark, maybe a bit. Even the things that I like to keep dark. My favorite stanza out of all of these is probably the one with "our resources dwindle with each passing day, as the greedy hold them and keep them at bay, leaving the rest to suffer and die in vain, a world that's forever locked in eternal pain." Because for me, we're all each in our bubble, and no one is trying to connect to anyone else. And that to me is just horrible, and I needed to say that in a way that people might see it.
I like that. And you know what? That is so true. We are really becoming a society of disconnect. So very cool.
And what I really love about the show, what I really love having the ability to talk to the authors and have them present their work, is I always get more. Your voice, the way you present this first poem, and I think it's going to be similar with a lot of them because a lot of them are similarly toned, but you've got it, man. You spot on take the listener, not just the reader, because I've been through your set list, but hearing it again with your voice, your camber, the pace that you present this is just, it's molasses. It's beautifully sweet and good, and I just want to sit in those moments because you do captivate every essence of everything that you just said and what you're trying to convey audibly as well. So it's fun to hear you read these poems. I can't wait to have you dive into more. And what's really interesting is, yeah, it's dystopia. And, yeah, I understand the frustration and the message of everything you said, but it has a duality in its effect. I mean, you could, as a listener, as a fan, as a person, as a reader – I can point my finger and say, yes, this is a bad state of affairs, but it can also be inspirational, if that makes sense. I think dark poems can make us look through that magnifying glass at ourselves and then maybe even make that change. So I think pointing out fault, I think looking at things that are ugly or bother a reader or bother an author when they put together something like this can be interpreted in a number of different ways, even if there is obviously that intended style. I think the intended style of dystopia is – there's a huge following for it. We're finding more and more poets on here that do it really well. And I don't think it's easy. I love the fact that you have such a great niche and you're able to delve into it with such exacting capture of that emotion. And there's the famous ones. I mean, look at Edgar Allan Poe. I mean, he has a little bit of a following himself. So I kind of want you to talk about that. I want you to talk about what draws you maybe to darker dystopian rites, and even kind of even dovetail that into your moniker that you have on the site of Archdoom DeVille and how all that ties together.
Archdoom is a name I've used a lot to mask myself, and then DeVille just came by after it, and I like it. I know that there's no double L, and usually, if you use it, there is. Why I decided that there's not going to be a double L is because, for me, when you hear DeVille, what you think about is Cruella DeVille. And I love dogs. So I wanted to have nothing to do with that. But I like the name, so I just changed it up a bit and came up with it. And Yeah, I like dystopia. This is probably, like, more than half the literature I read is dystopian. And for me, that's just a way of expression, and I love it. And even if it's good, I can probably find a way to make it dark and a bit dystopian-y, even if I love every aspect of it. And I think everyone will agree with me that the world is not something we all like, at least not every aspect of it, because there are a lot of things we would like to change in it. So for me, that's part of the reason I'm doing it.
Yeah, no, it's 100% true. And I'm kind of scared of the people that think the world is perfect and walk around with rainbows and lollipops and skipping all over the place. I like people that are able to realize the reality and the trueness and the harshness of the world. It's fun to kind of dive into and celebrate on its own right. And I love the fact that you brought up that you left the other L out, because when I was setting up your page, I put the other L in, and I noticed that you only had one, and I like that move all the better. I mean, I think it's a cool relationship that you have, and I like that you even threw that in the explanation. So right on, man. Very cool answer. Your next poem, The Endless Night, is up, ready when you are.
Okay. The Endless Night. In the dead of night, I lay awake. My mind a tumultuous storm, a constant ache, a never-ending break, a place where my fears transform. My thoughts, they grip me in their hold, a merciless, never-ending loop, a mind that can never be consoled, a prison I can never elope. The world outside, a barren wasteland, a place where hope has gone astray, a realm of darkness where misery is at hand, where death and decay hold sway. The streets, they're barren, the skies, they weep, a world where the sun never shines, where the sound of screams forever creep, and humanity's hope forever declines. My mind is his eternal curse, a fate they can never escape, in a world of torment where every breath is worse, and hope is a mere shape. Darkness swallows me whole as I descend into the abyss, a world that's taken its toll on the mind that's lost its bliss. There is no escape from this endless pain, no way to break free from my fate, in a world where my sanity is slain and I am left to deteriorate. End poem.
I'm telling you, Pam, he's got it. It's a sweet molasses. Arch Doom, that was a wonderful read, man. You really can get into the spirit of this poetry, and it's a joy to listen to. Yeah, I call it the monkey mind, the monkey voice in my head, laying down in bed, and there's two parts of it. So it can either be the darkness, the fear, the nightmares. I'm a huge fan of things that go bump in the night, and sometimes I go too far, and I lay there with paranoia in the bed, but that's not what this is. This is that monkey mind of something that's bothering you, some kind of anxiety that's in your brain, that voice that won't let you go to sleep because you have so much, again, anxiety about, in this case, the state of things. For me, if I lay down in bed and have one thought about work, it's over. I'm up for the next 2 hours worrying about things, having that anxiety. It's the monkey mind. It's the mind, that voice in my head that will not shut up unless I try to trick it by trying to write poetry or do something or tell myself a story, something totally different that will allow me release from that curse, from that unrest. So, yeah, I like this one a lot. I love how you put it together, and, of course, I love how you present it. I'm probably going to repeat that sentiment all evening long, Archdoom, because it's a joy, man. Talk to me about format. That's an easy one. Talk to me about your propensity to rhyme, because you do it so well. It's not easy. It's not the current trend these days for people to take the added effort to make poems flow so well in a rhyming classic, quote-unquote, format. So talk to me about your efforts and why you tend to veer that way so often.
Okay, well, First of all, I am an ESL person, which means that I did not hear English from a very early age. I learned it later on in life. And for me, playing with words is something I like because I like to play with things. And I started off, and I'm still mostly a mathematician. And for me, just playing with things and seeing where they fit is something I tremendously enjoy. And even using Google a lot to find rhymes, I sometimes do that. I try to do it not too often. But I like searching and hunting and trying to find words that will rhyme, that will not ruin the poem itself and have them forced. I try to experiment with different rhymes because I am still new to writing, let's say, because I'm pretty young and I have written, let's say, a lot of my life, not always in English. And when I started off with short stories, then turned to poetry, then stopped for a while, and then when I got back in, I tried writing poetry, which is not formatted at all. But then I decided, no, okay, I'm going to format it now, and this is the current state of affairs. So I wouldn't say it's a preference and that's all I do. I would say that I am in a phase where I like to do that right now. And I take it as a puzzle I want to solve, which is all the more fun for me.
And I think that's so true. I like how you ended that. It's a phase that you're in now, because I find myself doing the same thing. I find myself falling in love with a certain format, whether it be classical or one that I even stumble upon myself, and then I can't get out of it. It's like you just said, it's a puzzle, and it's a comfortable puzzle, I guess. It's a format, it's a framework that has a gratifying end. So, wonderful answer. Go ahead, Pam, jump in.
Absolutely. Oh, well, first of all, I really like what you had to say, Jeremy, about how it speaks on anxiety, the kind of anxiety that keeps you up at night. I think that's something that many poets can find relatable. Yeah, this is a beautifully written dark write that, you know, shows the thoughts of someone who's extremely worried about the world and what's going on around in it. I also think in a way it speaks on the depression that really holds sway with a lot of poets. I do particularly like the lines, "My mind is my eternal curse, a fate I can never escape, in a world of torment where every breath is worse and hope is a mere shape." I feel within that line and many of those lines and many of the lines throughout this poem, there is a real Edgar Allan Poe feel to it. And not just because it's a rhyming poem, but it actually kind of makes me think of a lot of his stories, how so oftentimes, like in his stories, he got into the mind of the person who was going insane and really brought us into there. And I think that's what you've done a wonderful job of doing, is bringing us into that mind, into those thoughts of what it's like to be so burdened, because you see the world for what it is. You know, and so just a wonderful write and very well done. And so I know you said you started writing stories first and then switched to poetry. Was there any particular reason that you decided to like what inspired you to give poetry a try?
I am a boy, and I currently, for all my life, have liked girls, and I have found out that girls like poetry to be written for them, especially. So that, I would say that is a big part of the reason I tried poetry.
I love that honesty.
Why, well, I stuck with it, though, is because I really like the format, and it's short, it's concise, and you don't need to have, you don't need to waste a lot of time either of yours or of the reader to tell them something really deep and something which can maybe move them and cause them to think.
That is a really good point. Yes, that is true. You can really get something deep across without, you know, a lot of words. But yeah, and it's like, you know, it's like a Dead Poets Society, where Robin Williams' character, the teacher, points out that we write poetry to woo women. And very cool.
I think that's one of the best answers I've heard to date about why somebody got into poetry. I did it for the girl. I love that. And if I would have known that, Archdoom, back in the day, or if I even had the talent and propensity to get a girl's attention, I would have definitely put that in my bag of tricks long ago. What a wonderful answer. Your next poem, Trapped in Brilliance, is up. Ready when you are.
Okay, let's try it on for size. Trapped in Brilliance. In a world where darkness reigns, the gifted ones are cursed with brains, their minds too sharp, their thoughts too fast, a curse that leaves them outcast. Their brilliance shines like a beacon bright, a curse that comes with endless night. Their souls, consumed by a never-ending war, a darkness leaves them forever sore. In the face of endless strife, they turn to drugs to numb their life. A fleeting sense of peace, a brief reprieve, but the cost is steep, their souls to cleave. The chemicals course through their veins, a temporary escape from their brains. But the toll is too high, the cost too dear, a black hole consuming, living nothing but fear. Their eyes once bright, now hollow and dark, their souls consumed by the drug's deadly mark. Their bodies a shell, their minds no more, a warning to all of what's in store. In this world of shadows and despair, the geniuses are doomed to care. Their brilliance, a curse, their lives a fight, a society that crushes them with all its might. Their minds too sharp for a word so cold, a fate sealed like a death foretold. Their souls consumed, their spirits crushed, their pain forever etched, never to be hushed. In a world so bleak and filled with dread, the gifted ones face torment and dead. They struggle on through endless strife, their souls scarred, their light dims in life. The curse of genius, a burden too so steep, their brilliance lost, their souls to keep. In a world where only the mindless thrive, the geniuses are left to suffer and strive. Their minds too great for a world so dim, their souls consumed like a never-ending hymn. Their fate sealed, their brilliance a curse, a warning to all of what is worse. End poem.
I really like this one. Pam, please start us off with comments.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Wonderful read. I really do like this one and how it speaks on the idea of that ignorance is bliss, and, you know, that the opposite idea that to have so much knowledge, to have so much intelligence and foresight really weighs heavy on somebody. And I like how this speaks on drug addiction and escapism, and how trying to escape from reality and wanting to escape from reality because you see it for how cruel it truly is. I really liked this all the way through, but especially their minds too sharp for a world so cold, a fate sealed like a death foretold, their souls consumed, their spirits crushed, their pain forever etched, never to be hushed. And one of the things that I found particularly interesting about this poem here was the fact that the first two poems you read were in a first-person narrative, and this you went with a second-person narrative, more of an observational narrative of observing somebody writing from the point of view of observing a group of people. So was there any particular reason you decided to go with this type of narrative as far as for this particular write?
Yeah, so when I was a child, I was also told that I was a genius, that I was a gifted child, and so on and so forth. I was lucky enough to prove them wrong. I hope I didn't. But I managed to stay out of all of those things. But I do surround myself with people who I would call geniuses myself. And I love them for it. But I have seen how they handle the world. And my driving stanza here would be, in the face of endless strife, they turn to drugs to numb their life, a fleeting sense of peace, a brief reprieve. But the cost is steep, their souls to cleave, reprieve, I'm sorry. For me, and this is, I think, the driving force of this, or I feel like it, is one of my closest friends at some point told me, dude, this is not a world for me, and I don't feel okay in this world, and I am probably not going to be here soon, but I'm going to do it in the most fun way I can manage. So that made me think, and when I wrote this, I actually thought of exactly those words. I'm glad that he's still with us, and to this day, he's probably one of the smartest people I know. But I can see how someone who has all the brains in the world finds it so utterly disgusting that they want to end it all, find a way out and do something about it, but they can't. So they go to a dark place where they feel like they're something less.
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Wow, and great pickup on the perspective shift on that one, Pam, because, yeah, this, because of the perspective switch, it makes it sound like it's even much more of a personal write, Archdoom. So great story. And it reminded me of that age-old question, would you rather be brilliant and miserable in life, or would you rather be dumb and happy? And my answer was, yeah, I'd always rather be dumb and happy. I mean, why wouldn't you want to go through life being happy even if you're adult, or even if you can't add or whatever, as long as you find happiness, that's really the spice of life, in my opinion. In contrast, I agree with you. I've never been accused of being a genius by any stretch of the imagination, but I always have found greater joy in surrounding myself with people that are much more intelligent than myself. I like being around smart people. I like hearing what they have to say. I like what they have to offer the world. But yeah, it has to be, in a lot of regards, it has to be a tough existence. I mean, if you're so far ahead of everyone around you, it's got to lead to depression. And the fact that this touches on numbing that depression through addiction proves that addicts or people that have problems with any kind of, again, addiction can come from a lot of different angles, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that they're on the lower end of society. They could be on the upper echelon and still need to turn to the same kind of numbing that people could have, because pain comes from all different angles. So it's very interesting that this poem equates brilliance with pain and then how to deal with it, something that you wouldn't necessarily even imagine would be the course of action. Great write, man. Definitely got me thinking. Definitely brought a smile to my face. One thing that you said earlier that definitely made me perk up is, I love math. I think math is way underutilized in poetry because math is beautiful in its honesty. One thing that we've had and talked to a lot of poets on this show is those that often strike a chord really do a good job of being honest with their emotions. They unabashedly tell the truth, and it comes through in their words. And I think that's the beauty of math, because you can't lie in math. It's honest every time. It's true. It's clean. It follows the rules. And when it doesn't follow the rules, those few times when it does something different that is not that's not logical, that makes it that much more interesting. So I love math. I think it has a huge part in poetry, and I kind of want you to nerd out with me for a minute and just tell me about your love affair. You brought up math, and do you want to expand upon that?
I don't know if it was love at first sight, but it was one of those first sights when I fell in love with it. I think around second or third grade, I started going to competitions. It turned out that I'm good at them, so I continued with all of that. I think up to like eighth or ninth grade, I was doing pretty well at them. But then life came, and I wanted to do different things. So it became something that I like to do, but it's not my main thing. So I wouldn't say that I am a very big nerd, although I am somewhat of a big nerd. I don't know if that's good for me or not, because I would probably be in a lot of less trouble through my life if I was just a nerd and just wanted to be either on the board or in my papers, just scribbling around numbers. But we always have to decide sometimes. So I love it, and I like to bring it in everything I do. Even in university, that's how I was tutoring people from schools and whatnot who wanted to get better or didn't understand something. And I would say that this is one of my callings in life. I don't really use it in poetry that much. I don't count syllables and things like that. I tried it. It's not my thing. It makes a fun puzzle. It turns a fun puzzle into something which you want to solve, but it's not really there and it's not really happening. And maybe someday I will try it again. But until this day, I have not fallen in love with counting syllables. But I do like rhyming.
And I think yes, fair enough. Fair enough. And I think it can come across in a lot of different ways than just counting syllables, too. I mean, iambic pentameter, I think, has a math feel to it, just in the stress of words, the flow of it, obviously the song of math, I guess. I don't know if I'm saying that right. But anyway, no, I love your answer. I like your background with it, and I like to delve into it. I like the concepts of it, and I like to try to bring it in just as another spin on things. So great answer, my friend. I love it. I want to give you the opportunity. This isn't really halfway point because we do have the luxury of time, like I said. But I want to give you the opportunity to self-promote a little bit. We are going to dive into another poem you have on another site. You do have a present here on All Poetry. Can you just tell the audience, do you have any published works? Do you have other places that we can find your stuff?
Other places? Currently, I have a Facebook page where you can find me. It's the same name as my moniker here. I am not really that active there, because if I'm writing something, I'm probably getting it somewhere on a website and then maybe publishing it as well on the Facebook page. This might all change in the future. For now, I am mostly active on this site, somewhat active on Facebook, and there is another website, which is called My Poetic Side, where you can find some of my works, which they are a bit earlier. I'm not that proud of them. I had a long break from writing. Like, I had like 5 or 6 years where I wrote nothing. And then late last year, I started writing again. However, I tried, as I said, starting with poetry, which is not formatted in any way. I actually don't know what to call it even. Maybe freeform, but this is also freeform. It just rhymes and is formatted in stanzas. And it was something like a bet. I made a bet that whether I can write a book or not in a month. So I did, and I won the bet. I'm proud to say, and you can see that book. It's up for grabs on Amazon. It's called The Soul Divided in Two. It's very lovey-dovey shit. I don't know if I like it that much personally, but the person who it was written for loved it. And they cried a bit, even on multiple occasions. I don't think it's my best work I've ever done. It was, as I said, a bet, and I'm really glad I won it, and I like it, because it was my first creation, and it felt very, very good, and actually getting it out, and seeing what happens with it pushed me to continue writing after it came, because the feeling of me getting it out, and then people actually liking it, felt insane, and I just wanted to continue with it. It was like a drug. I was hooked.
There's much worse things to be addicted to. Tale Divided in Two is available. Is that right? Tale Divided in Two?
Soul Divided in Two.
Okay. And that is still divided in two, and it's available on Amazon. And it's fiction?
It's poetry. It's love poetry, mostly.
Oh, it's a poetry compilation. Oh, great. Do you can do links to your books here on your AP site. Have you done that?
No, I haven't. I'll probably
do
that.
I'll give you the link. I'll DM you the link just so you can put it on your main page here so people can support you. Because that's what we try to do, try to give you as much press as we can and get it out there. That's very cool, man. I'm glad that you were able to put a book out. Did you do it as part of NaNoWriMo, the November book writing challenge that everyone signs up for? Or did you do it on your own?
Nope, I just did it on my own. I just wrote. There were times when I wrote like 5 or 6 things in a day. And then I read some of them to some people. Some of them liked it, some of them didn't. Because for me, that is not what you would call classical poetry, let's say. And it really isn't my forte, but I tried it to emphasize. And some of the things I like in there, some of the things look like maybe a 15-year-old wrote them. But that's also fun.
Sometimes it is painful to look back. Well, I will definitely, after the show, I'll send you the link on how you can promote your book here on AP so everybody can find it easily, okay? Very cool.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was going to say we also have a topic board in Late Night Poets for our Late Night Poets members to put a link to their books, so we can send that to you too.
Absolutely. No.
And I was also going to say, I thought it was funny, Jeremy, that you brought up National Novel Writing Month, because I was actually going to ask him about that, because I tried that a few times in my life, only got the 50,000 words done once. The other times I fell very, very short.
It's
a fun challenge. It is. My gosh, yeah.
I don't
realize how difficult it is to get 50,000 words in 1 month.
And the juice was it for me was just to sit down and find out that rhythm. And once I was able to find a time at night where I could sit down and devote to hit the 1,500 or whatever the magic number is to get to the 50,000, that's when all it finally came together. But yeah, it's fun. Anyway. The Death of Joy is up on the boards, ready when you are.
Okay, this you might like. The Death of Joy. The world's a machine, a relentless beast, a place of pain and misery where joy is deceased. Trapped in an endless cycle, day by day, life consumed, fading slowly, with nothing left to say. We toil and sweat, our souls consumed in a never-ending cycle, our spirits doomed, the weight of the world upon our backs, caught in a cycle that never relax. Our dreams are lost, buried and forgotten. The machine takes over, leaving us broken. No time to breathe, to feel, to live. A life consumed, nothing left to give. The world turns dark. No glimmer of light, as we are consumed by the never-ending fight. a life spent working, a life spent in vain, our passions lost, swallowed by the pain, the death of joy, a world without hope, where we struggle and suffer just to cope, trapped in a cycle that never ends, our lives consumed by the machine that bends. Let us weep for a life consumed, trapped in a cycle with no hope to exhume, our hearts heavy, our spirits frail, in a world that's lost, where joy's gone stale. End poem.
And it's got to be my greatest fear to live in a joyless life, to look back, to live during all your prime years and to look back and realize that you never experienced any joy, that you just became part of the machine, another cog, and you have nothing to show for it, so to speak. Because everything's about me, and let me talk about my life. So my wife and I kind of threw a wrench in everything when the market here in the U.S. went to crap, and we sold everything and we lived abroad. And so for the better part of a decade, I kind of lived in a tourist town kind of as a beach bum and gave up all my adult responsibilities and kind of scoffed at the fact. I kind of went, good, look at me. I am not going to live that life as a cog. I'm not going to look back without joy and realize that the life has passed me by. And it's scary from both ends, right? It's scary when you kind of throw caution to the wind, but now that I've given up on a party life and decided to be an adult again, I look back and think of how foolish that was. So I think there's ways to do it. I think there's ways to always realize joy, and it's a sad life if you can't discover that in whatever you're doing. And I love this and the fact that that's a reminder. It's a reminder to find joy in whatever your vocation in life may be. And if your vocation is set up in such a way that you can't find joy, that you can't find any kind of happiness, then there's no reason you can't shift gears. And this kind of, and again, this message is something that I alluded to earlier when I said, yeah, you can have a dark right, and you can have a dark right and get caught up in it, but it can also make you look at yourself and it's inspirational. And that's what this one did again. It made me realize that even today, I need to always be aware that joy is fleeting if I let it be. So I think there's a great message to it, and I really enjoyed the poem. Something else that I want to talk to you about that you alluded to is your love of language. I love when poets delve into several languages in their poem. I think it adds a beautiful spice and an extra layer of intrigue to what they're doing. I am floored to hear earlier that you said that English is not your first language, and you're able to rhyme and have a mastery of pace and language and rhyme scheme with it not being your first, with English not being your first language. So do you want to talk, and you had also said that you've written poems in other languages. Do you want to talk about, expand upon your love of language, how that affects your poetry, how writing in English is a pro or a con in creating your artwork?
Well, English is not my first language, but for some reason I find it easier to write in English because I find it very melodic. So most of the things, especially in the near past, I've mostly written in English. I like it because it just sounds good. Before that, I've also written in my native language, but for me that mostly sounds good for stories. And I don't like the rhymes because when you go into those rhymes, that language is Bulgarian. If you want to go into rhymes, you get into really archaic words, and they just don't sound good to me from the perspective of a young person. And this is what we try to do. We try to write for everyone to enjoy it. And if you're a young person and you don't know half the words, then your enjoyment isn't there. And I just like the rhythm that I can get with English better and easier. And no one wants for them to have to struggle to do something. We all prefer to have it easier. So that's a big part of the reason. I didn't start off liking languages a lot. I think I've always had a knack with English, but I also learned German in school, and that was a totally different affair. Currently, I love it as well. I just didn't then, but we were like in the class. We had a lot of people. Some of us were just having fun competing with each other, seeing who's going to do better, who's going to get the higher certificates, who's going to score higher on the competition we're going to, and stuff like that. So it was really fun, and it was a competition, and there was really joy. And it, especially with this poem, what really pained me in life was seeing people that I've known in my childhood, haven't seen them for a few years. I knew their dreams, and when we start talking of how are you doing, what's up with that dream of yours, and then they say, yeah, well, those are just dreams, and dreams are there so that you can dream about something, but real life hit, and we had to do something about it. And that, you just get up on a dream, is something that I cannot allow myself, and I find it really sad when someone does, because dreams are for pursuing. And if you give up on something, either you're grown up and you found that it is not a dream worth pursuing, and maybe you don't want it that much, or you've just given up because it's hard for you and everything. Yeah, a lot of things are hard, but that is, for me, like, life is shit and everybody dies. But it's important what you do while you're on this planet, because someday none of us are going to be. So let's make most of it. I don't know if that made any sense.
No, yeah, I just got scared that we got dropped, Archduke. It's okay. No, I heard what you said. No, great message. And I love a lot of that. First of all, yes, the message and the dream, all of that, all of what you just said is very impactful, very what I got from this poem. Going back to language, too, I love the fact that you said that English is melodic for you. And it allows you to connect with the child and the reader. I never looked at English that way, but I can see where you're coming from. And I think it's so much fun to have people expand upon language. We've had several poets on the show that English is not their first language. And we even had Mam Yaw read one of her poems in her native tongue, and just to see how the feel of that after she read it in English felt. So yeah, I nerd out on language as much as I nerd out on math. So I love your explanation and then your deeper dive into the meaning of this poem. Wonderful. I just want to mention before moving on to Pam's comments that Jenny the Deep is on the boards. She said she loves the poem March Doom, especially the last stanza, such a great way to end it. And Hats has joined us as well, and she's clapping along with your writings as we're moving forward. So, Pam, I want to turn it over to you, please.
All right. Yes, I really liked listening to your guys' discussion there, and the delving into the thoughts of language and you know, playing with it. But I really like this one and how, you know, it speaks on dreams and, you know, how it feels like when they're lost and buried. And I really had to say, I really liked what you had to say, Archdoom, on that, how dreams are meant to be pursued, you know. And I think actually it's a wonderful thing. I think friends should more often reach out to each other and say, hey, how are those dreams coming along? I particularly like this, the death of joy, a world without hope, where we struggle and suffer just to cope, trapped in a cycle that never ends, our lives consumed by the machine that bends. This is another one that really speaks on a loss of humanity. And I like how it speaks on that, and it's powerful. Definitely a powerful write, and very well done. And a couple of things I would like to know about you is I would like to know if you have any favorite classic poets or authors, and I'd also like to know what kind of music you enjoy listening to, if you enjoy listening to music, which most people do.
Okay, I'm going to start with commenting on the stanza. This is also probably one of my favorite stanzas, just because of the way it ends. Our lives consumed by the machine that bends. Because, yeah, this, you can probably tell, was written while I was listening to Floyd. And I love them. They're probably one of my favorite bands. If I can call them a band and not just legends. And Welcome to the Machine for me is something that, even when I was down, kept me going, drove me to continue, because I was like, no, I am not going to be a part of this machine. I'm going to be out of it, and I don't want to have anything to do with it. And yeah, we're all part of the machine, but let's not just be cogs in it. You wanted to know about poets. For me, we've mentioned him a couple of times already. Poe, to me, he's just awesome. I love him. He's actually probably one of, other than girls, he's probably the biggest reason I got into poetry. I was, I think, 7th or 8th grade. We read The Raven by him in school, and I fell in love with it immediately. There were words I didn't understand. I went, translated them, figured what each and every word meant, and that was the beginning of my journey. I read a lot of his poems. I wouldn't say I've read everything. I read a lot of his stories as well, and I just love everything he does. If I have to talk about authors in general, that's a tough one because I have a lot, but if I have to just pinpoint one, it has to be Bradbury. He writes dystopia so well, and everything he writes, especially his stories, like, I know people who aren't big fans of his books, but I've read them some of his stories, and everyone loves his stories. I am a big book nerd myself, and I like his novels, but I enjoy the stories a lot as well. So those are pretty much probably the two people I can say that I strive to take pieces of their work with me, or at least some of their ideas, or the tone of Bradbury, because his tone is just incredible. With music, I enjoy a lot of music. I pretty much can't exist without music, I think. Maybe you can see this from my writings. I'm not much into pop. I like classical music. I like country. I like darker, more gothic things. I also like rock, hard rock, and everything like that. But if it's good, I'm going to listen to it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I get that. You know, there's certain genres I listen to more than others. But there's always exceptions for every genre. And I was going to say, I mean, I'm just going to slightly selfishly promote a contest here that if you like classical music, you should really check out this contest I'm running for next week's Break On Through show called Music and Surrealism. I have a variety of classical music conductors, artists who were inspired by the movement of surrealism, such as George Antheil, Edgard Varese, Eric Satie. I don't know if any of those appeal to you, but if they do, check it out and see if it inspires you. Sorry about that.
Ooh, you mentioned Derek Satie. Okay, send me the link, please, and I will see what I can do about it.
Well, wonderful.
Eric Satie
wonderful.
Is probably one of the composers I listen to most.
Oh, awesome. I will definitely be sending you that link.
Hey, what is this plugging other shows on this show, Pam? What are you trying to pull? Hey, it's speaking of which, though, I mean, do you co-host with Rex with his show where it's fully music-based? Am I off on that? Or he does an entire show. Go ahead.
He does do an entire show that's completely music-based. I was thinking it was such a shame that Archdoom missed the show where we celebrated the 50th or something like that. I think it's 50th. A huge anniversary of Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. And that show is Rhythm and Rhyme, and it's on every Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. And the next one, the contest that Rex is running now, is the music of Greg Brown, who's a folk, an American folk singer.
Very cool. Well, if you're interested in Archdoom, it's definitely something worth checking out, because I know there's other shows here on our channel, and they all do a wonderful job, especially Pam's contest. I will always be a proponent of promoting what she does. Your next poem is Descent to Hell. It's on the board, ready when you are.
Okay. Descent to Hell. What lies in hell, you bravely ask? A realm where souls meet their grueling task. A place where hope is forever lost, and eternal despair is the ultimate cost. The flames that rage, they scorch and burn like a fierce inferno, they never turn. The heat is searing, it's no joke, as it chars your soul and makes you choke. The demons that haunt, they revel in delight at the agony they cause with all their might. Their eyes flash with malice, their teeth bared, as they revel in the torment you've shared. The stench of sulfur, it permeates the air as you struggle and gasp in endless despair. The darkness engulfs you like a ruthless thief, and the screams of the damned offer no relief. The torture you face, it's not just physical, but mental and emotional is diabolical. From regret to remorse to all your fears, your mind spirals and your soul dissolves into tears. So envision it, if you dare, a place of unending anguish and despair, a place where you pay for every mistake, and your soul shatters like a glass that'll break. End poem.
Go ahead, Pam. You get to start this one.
Oh, this is, I have to say, I mean, all your pieces tonight have been wonderful performance pieces. But I have to say, this one in particular, I can see being used, like, read on a stage. Like, I can imagine you on a stage and asking that opening question to the audience. And now, me personally, I'm a big fan of questions in poetry, because I think it can set the tone. It can, you know, give the reader an opportunity to think along with you. But I do acknowledge that, like any other poetic device, it can be overused. Like, you don't want to be bombarded with questions. But the fact that you open up with a question, and that you, so we know that you're speaking to somebody, or the character is speaking to somebody. Like, this has a very, what is it called in an act in a play where there's only one character speaking and there's nobody else?
A monologue?
Yes, that's it. Thank you. I hate when I all of a sudden blank out on simple words. But yes, it has a very monologue type feel to it. And yet we know that, you know, you're speaking to a person or to an audience. What lies in hell, you bravely ask, a realm where souls meet their grueling task, a place where hope is forever lost, and eternal despair is the ultimate cost. I also like how visceral you get with this. The torture you face, it's not just physical, but mental and emotional. It's diabolical, from regret to remorse to all your fears. Your mind spirals and your soul dissolves into tears. So there's that deep sense of that psychological anguish. I see you wrote this one for a contest. So I was going to ask what inspired it, but obviously in part the contest did. Tell me, like, because this probably obviously has something to do with your own personal thoughts of, like, heaven, hell, afterlife. And if it doesn't, I apologize. And if you don't want to answer that, I'm fine with that because it's understandable. But does your own personal thoughts on the afterlife come into play in this, right? Or is it a fiction per se?
This is actually a funny story. No, it doesn't depict my thoughts on afterlife. I don't really have any because I haven't been there. Someday we'll all be there and we'll see what it's like. I have no idea myself. But it was for a contest. And the contest's title, which I liked, was What's Hell Like? And if I remember correctly, before starting to write about it, I didn't even read what the rules were, because this made me think of a certain exam in university, as funny as that is. One of my favorite professors to this day, he is just a brilliant mind. It was less mathy and more logic-y of a subject. But we were talking and he had to grade me, and I had said something very stupid, along with everything that I had said correct. But that stupid thing was enough for me to get failed. And if I was the professor, I would fail me too. But the way he did it was utterly horrifying. And then he apologized because we played cards together after classes and things like that. But he failed me. Like, his tone got deep. He got really quiet. And that was not the question he asked. But he asked the question, "Boy, do you know what eternity feels like?" And I said, "No." He said, "I don't know myself either. But that is the amount of time you're going to burn in hell for the things you said now." And then he got into extreme details on how and why I was wrong. And that's how it felt at that point. At that moment, I shrank and I was like, holy shit. I don't know what is happening right now, but it feels like I am in hell. And I love him for it. No hard feelings. He apologized after that. It was all in the spur of the moment. But it was amazing, and it was something weird for me to have experienced. And I loved it. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Very cool.
Holy shit. Where did you go to school? I love that.
Yeah, well, he obviously
I love
went
it and I hate it.
In the deepest pits of hell.
I know. I love that a professor had the balls to do that. That's it's terrifying and it's beautiful all at once. What a great story. What I really like about this, Pam, is that you said it's a monologue. And then Archdoom, I loved your answer is, yeah, it is, because everyone's hell has to be different, right? Because there is no proof. No one's coming back with any kind of definitive answer on exactly what hell is. And so it's fun to, because it's a monologue, it's making it personal. And I love that you picked up on that, Pam. And I agreed with so much of this, because there has been those instances. There has been those moments I've had sitting in front of a belittling professor where I've gone, you know what? If there is a hell, I am experiencing it right now. And I think that having everyone write down, even as a contest, I like that people kind of are able to express what that worst possible scenario could be. And I think you did it in the 1, 2, 3, 4, and the 5th. The torture you face is not just physical, but mental and emotional. It's diabolical, from regret to remorse to all your fears. Your mind spirals and your soul dissolves into tears. I mean, yeah, that's just the belittling of it all. And I think, yeah, you can, if you're burning in eternity, if they're ripping the flesh off of your body, after a while you're going to get numb. But yes, that mental torture as well, that's what you can't escape. And it's very similar to what you spoke of in that earlier poem, when you're laying in bed and you're having that mental torture of fear or angst. To me, that is the hell. And I love that you captured it to your own creation in this poem. I also want to say that Hats is on the board. Hats commented and said, I can relate to emotional hell. I think it's all in our heads only. And so, yeah, that's kind of what I'm expanding upon. I think it's a great write, man. And I want you to, for fun or just so we can know you a little bit better, tell us about your writing process. And it's kind of a two-part question, so I'll just give you one part at this time. Physically, what is your writing process? Are you sitting down in a certain spot every day? Is it a certain time of the day? Do you have to be in a certain mood? Or what does your writing process look like physically?
It's honestly all over the place. I don't have a concrete process for writing. I would like it to be with a pen on paper, but it's not. Just the fact that I can go on the computer screen, click on a word, and replace it with another word is very, very easy. And I just don't write on pen and paper. I know that to this day, some of our greatest writers continue writing on paper before moving to a computer. I cannot do that yet anyway. I need to be in a certain mood. And that's the thing. I constantly throughout the day, I might be working, I might be traveling, I might be with friends. I will get between 10 and 20 ideas for poems every single day. And the thing is, I usually cannot sit there and then to write it. And for me, the feeling of it all is very important. And I cannot, if I can't have the feeling when I came up with it, and I can't keep to that feeling, I cannot write it. So there's like maybe 100 ideas a week which don't get written, just because I had a fleeting moment of a feeling, I got an idea. I sometimes even write the ideas down so that I don't forget them, and then I get back to them and I'm like, okay, I know this idea is good, and I know I had something, but I lost it and I can't get it back. So it's when I get an idea, if I am in front of a screen, be it a phone, because a lot of things I've written are just written on my phone tapped away. If I'm in front of the screen and I can capture that feeling, I can write it. But to me, if I don't feel that thing when I got the idea, I can try writing it, but I cannot. And that actually answered not the part of the physical writing, but the part of the mentality of it. Physically, what I write, when I write, I scribble a lot of things. And I'm sometimes writing like 2 or 3 pages of lines, which I'm then going to comb through, and I'm going to find what I like, different stanzas, and then I'm going to, it's like a draft. I do a draft of like 2 or 3 pages for pretty much everything I write, and then I comb through it, find the ones I like more, get things from the ones I like less, and try to fit them in the ones. I create a puzzle, and then I try to solve it. This is pretty much my writing process.
Well, and then that definitely dovetails into my follow-up question. So to make it rhyme and to make your formats work, to make your stanzas work, you have to have a shit ton of editing that goes along with that. So I like that you have to, when the inspiration hits you, you got to catch it in the moment. I can totally relate to that. But then, so you write down 3 pages of ideas or inspiration or brainstorming.
talk to me about polishing the nugget to make it work for you. How long are you spending going back then and making your rhyming work, looking things up in the thesaurus like you spoke of earlier? Talk to me about making it to the final draft.
Well, I try to make it rhyme in the beginning. If it doesn't rhyme at all, I'm probably not going to get it rhyming in the end. But I might change up how it rhymes. Like, I might start with an ABAB writing scheme, and then I might switch it to AABB, and that's as easy as switching two rows. And this is why, like, a text editor is really awesome, because it allows you to do that and you don't have to rewrite everything. And then I try to make it fit. I read over, comb through it. I usually hate a poem for like at least half a day after I finish writing it. I usually, if it's for a contest, I submit it hating it. And I don't want to look at it at all. And that's usually why, if I have a SoundCloud, it usually comes out later after I've like left it sit for a day or two, and then I come back to it. I might edit it again after that. And then I'm like, okay, this is not that bad. I am going to record a SoundCloud, maybe record 2, 3, 5 takes, something like that, until I like what it's says, and I think and I like what it does. I have times when I can't find a rhyme which I like, and I even sometimes rhyme a word with itself to get all the meaning, and then I go and try to go into Google, find rhymes, see what I can change to make it fit and still sound good. I there are some places where I feel like my rhymes sound forced. I try to mitigate that as best as I can. But it doesn't always happen. But that is pretty much what I go through.
Wow. No, I like that. I just even wrote under the sentence, rhyme a word with itself. I like how you do that. I like how you're able to think ahead in where you want the poem to go. And you let the words come when they have to come. I don't know if that makes sense, but I really like how you describe that entire process. I'm the exact opposite, though, in terms of the finished product. I will beat that metal drum until I love it. And so I like that you have the strength to put something out that almost repulses you, and then you come back around and then warm back up to your poetry. That's brave, and I think it works, because – whatever you're doing, however you're coming to pass about making this format work, especially with the rhyme, which I can't praise enough, because it's not easy. So the fact that you put in that extra effort, and it doesn't feel forced. I think it feels forced when it's predictable, when I can go through and I already know what the next line is going to be before it even comes out. That's when it feels forced to me. And in all honesty, I don't feel that with your poetry. I think your rhyme comes across very natural. It flows, and it feels comfortable. And comfortable poetry, ask Robert Frost, comfortable poetry makes the reader smile. And it definitely feels like home. I don't know how else to put it. But, yeah, no, I loved your answers to all of that. I think that's a wonderful process. And it's always very interesting to me how everyone gets their art form down and down on paper. So great answer, my friend. Your next poem, Radiation Burns, is up. Ready when you are.
Okay, radiation burns, city streets, a cheetah bold, with napalm heart and eyes that hold, a blaze of passion never told, a lost, forgotten boy in a world of hate, seeking foe to conquer and annihilate, radiation burning bright, my only mate. Darling, save me from the abyss of despair. Guide me through the darkness with your tender care. Ignite my soul with your love, a lavender rare. In this endless war, apologies have no place. My shattered soul can't keep up the pace. Baby, penetrate my heart, show me grace. Blind me with your light, lead me away. Forgotten boy, no longer lost, with feet that stay, seeking a new dawn in a world of decay. Rise up from the ashes. Shake off the chains of world's cruel lashes. Let my spirit soar as hope crashes. End poem.
And I'm glad we got you for a longer, because you're able to take a different tone with all of it. I mean, it's the same genre, but we're touching on love, Arch Doom, and the way you do it and keeping the same, like I said, genre of your poetry and your whole body of work we talked about tonight, it works so well. This one to me, and delve as deeply as you want, this one to me seems like one of the more personal ones, more autobiographical poems that you shared with tonight. And I'd love for you to expand upon that, the story behind this poem. And if you're not even comfortable with that, I just want you to talk about what it means to you, I guess.
This, for me, is a weird poem because usually I like to keep things simple. And I want everything I want to say to be out there so that everyone can hear the exact words I want to say. This is the one which... This is the odd one out, because the meaning of it is not what it seems. It's actually not that personal. And no one likes war, as maybe some people, but we don't want to talk with them. And for me, this is a war poem, and it's actually, I would say, a suicide poem. It depicts a young boy, let's say, who has been through so much bloodshed, and he's killed so many that death has become his mistress, and he's pleading with her, please come and please take me away. I can't do this anymore. And it was a fun experiment with me because I showed it to a lot of friends. I showed it to a lot of people. It also got read to on After Midnight. And a lot of people thought it was a love poem. And yes, it is kind of a love poem. But for me, it's a love poem taunting death, come and take me.
I'm glad you gave me your perspective, because, yeah, I swung and missed on this one big time. That's not where I came from. And I see exactly how it works in that light. Would you say then... And I love it. I love the fact that there's a deeper meaning that I didn't get the first pass through. Would you say that most of your poems then are deeply autobiographical, or do you think a lot of the stuff that you're coming from, the angle that you're coming from, is purely out of your imagination?
I would say that a big part of it is imagination, but I would also say that I can't write about something if it hasn't touched me. So I wouldn't say they're autobiographical, or at least not all of them, and maybe not most of them. But I need to be touched by something in order to write for it. I need to feel it because I can't just think it through. I need to lose myself. And with the process we talked about, the process of getting these like 3 or 4 pages of just jumbled words, which I have to make a sense of, I usually blank out and I don't know like half of the things I've written. So I just blank out and I write. And in order for something to happen then, I need to feel it and have some connection to it. But it's usually not autobiographical.
No, that makes sense with what you had described earlier too with your process. Huh? Great answer. Alrighty, Pammy, you want to chime in?
Oh, absolutely. You know I do. Yeah, I have to say, I'm so glad that you brought this poem and that we were able to hear your explanation on it, which of course makes me feel bad that it was in my contest and I did not see that deeper layer to it. Because it's just like Jeremy, it did speak to me on finding love, particularly in a time of devastation. But yeah, just... You know, mistresses come in many forms. They come in, you know, war. They come in the job. You know, they're just oftentimes whatever it is consumes us, becomes our our complete and utter love and our complete and utter destruction. You know, so just the amazing lines throughout. City streets, a cheetah bold, napalm heart and eyes that hold a blaze of passion never told. And in this endless war, apologies have no place. My shattered soul can't keep up the pace. Baby, penetrate my heart, show me grace. I really like the lines, in this endless war, apologies have no place, because I think it doesn't just, to me anyway, speak on the idea of war, but on the idea of the whole idea of how it's a dog-eat-dog world, and how, you know, people too oftentimes falsely think that, you know, weakness and apologies have no place, when reality, you know, kindness and apologies, you know, should be a very commonplace in this world. But an amazing write and very well done, and I'm so glad you could bring it. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to ask you the casserole dish question, which we always blame on Jeremy because he originally made this one up. And the casserole question is this. I am handing you a 9x13 casserole dish in which you can put in any and all ingredients that make up Archduke Deville, the poet and person. The ingredients do not have to be edible. They do not have to be tangible. What are you going to put in that casserole dish?
I'm not sure if it's a big enough dish. Okay. Well, there are going to be books because I don't think I can survive without them. Even when I'm traveling, like, I have a reader with me everywhere. And even though I do have a reader and I have all the books in the world available on it, I still like to bring a paper book because I love the feel of paper. It is very convenient, and I usually carry it because if I'm especially going on a longer trip, one book is usually not enough. And they get hefty and they weigh a lot if you get like two or three in there, and you have less space for other luggage. And I do like to travel, and I travel a lot. So that would be one. Probably cigars, because I am a smoker and I do love the taste of them, and I love just the way they make you feel. It is addiction. There are worse addictions than that, for sure. But it's one of mine, and I would probably put that in the dish. I would also probably put whiskey in there, because it's just something I really enjoy, especially like very good, even not that old of a whiskey, which is made in a good way. You use great casks in order to have it mature in the proper way. It's just art in itself. I would also put a hard drive of music in there, because music is something that drives me. I am somewhat scared to remain alone with myself without any music, because thoughts in your head can get sometimes annoying and sometimes even scary. And music mitigates that for me, and I really can't be without it. Those are some of the things that I can't do without. Other than that, probably a fountain pen, because I love writing, even though I don't do it that much by hand. And I really like a fountain pen because it makes you focus on what you're doing. You're not just scribbling something down without looking at it. You're paying attention and you're doing it with intent. And I just love that aspect of it. Probably some board games,
cool,
because I'm a geek.
Oh, man. Yeah, I remember getting into some arguments with my siblings over the exact rules of Monopoly. They always seem to change depending on the family that's playing. But I like those answers. Very cool.
Yeah, of all the casseroles that we've had presented by all these poets, I'm really digging Arch Dooms, Pammy, because, I mean, you're talking some booze, some tunes, a little cigar and a good book. Hell yeah, I want a slice of that casserole, Arch Doom. Great answer. Wonderful,
oh,
man.
Absolutely.
I love everything. And I like what you said. It ties into both. It ties into your process, and it ties into what makes up you. The feel of paper. I really like that comment, because I think that's a lost art in a lot of ways, in the way that the world's moving with everything being digital. But there is beauty to that, and there is beauty in writing poetry to it, because there is a stroke of purpose in every move that your hand has to make. And I love when poets say that they love to write things down with pen and paper. It makes me want to have better penmanship, because it takes the art to another sense of care, in my view. So I like the fact that you love to hold a good book, whether it's typed and you're just holding it, but it's the same kind of sensation in a lot of ways. So wonderful answer. Wonderful question, Pammy. I think you posed it one of the best ways we've been able to word it to date. So I'm glad you brought that one up. Your next poem, Sweet Venom, is on the board. Buried a little bit, but it's on there. Ready when you are.
Okay, Sweet Venom. Not all poisons have a bitter taste. Some allure you with their sweet embrace. A wicked charm, a silent call, leading you towards a deadly fall. Belladonna's berries, ruby reds and plum, a tempting fruit with a deadly thumb. Within their fleshy shell, a toxin lurks, claiming lives with its deadly quirks. Oleander's blooms white and pink, a deadly beauty with its sickly stink. With every breath, a toxic kiss, a fatal end that none would miss. And what of castor being so rich and sweet, a deadly dose that none can defeat? Its poison potent enough to slay, a single taste could lead to dismay. Beware the poisons that taste so fine, their saccharine taste, their wicked design. Not all that glitters is a jewel divine. Some sweetness conceals a deadly spine. End poem.
What a great closing line. Go ahead, Pam. Start us off, please.
Yeah, I have to agree. That is a great closing line. But all the way through, wonderful rhyme, wonderful imagery. I like how this speaks on the idea that, you know, oftentimes poison, it comes in disguise. And it works really nice on a dual level. You know, it gives us warnings about nature, but it also, I think, works on the idea of as a metaphor and gives us warning about people. I really like Oleander's blooms white and pink, a deadly beauty with a sickly stink, with every breath a toxic kiss, a fatal end that none would miss. And and what of castor being so rich and sweet, a deadly dose that none can defeat? Its poison potent enough to slay, a single taste could lead to dismay. And I like how this speaks to me on, and as I was saying, on a warning about nature, but also a warning on human nature. And just because someone looks beautiful, looks nice and sweet, you know, doesn't mean that underneath there isn't the potential for evil to be there. So amazing lines all the way through, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
And wonderful comment, Pam. And I totally agree with the duality of it, because I got the same take, and I think you nailed it in a lot of ways. Because, yeah, the poison can come obvious, but also the poison that is metaphoric, that really hurts, also can break you down even more. And the fact that it's in the title, it's Sweet Venom. When you think venom, it's something injected, and poison would be something you would actually have to ingest voluntarily, or at least put to your mouth, as opposed to having it imposed upon you. So, but it's always the poison hurts the most when it comes from a place you least expect it. So yeah, the whole metaphor and everything you're talking about, Pam, I think fits so well. And I like the fact that it's a little heavier veiled, Arch Doom. I mean, I think you feel it out of the beginning,
but then you're not afraid in all the points of making this more of a, about a physical poison as well. So in my mind, I wanted to just take that metaphor and run with it, but you brought me back time and time again to the beauty and the way that you do it in your language and your rhyme and your format of your poem, but the beauty of what poison can be. And it's always that Shakespearean tragedy in which it comes to play and it comes to the forefront of the mind. It's always a great tragedy when the poison comes to be that bitter end. So, yeah, I think this one carries a number of levels, and it definitely brought me a smile in the fact that the darkness of it can be interpreted, and it can hit you from can hit you in the heart as much as it can hit you in the lips. So, great, right? I want you to, before we sign off, I want you to give us a little bit of advice. I want you, you said that you've been away from poetry. You stopped writing for a while, and then you came back. Can you talk about your journey, your writing, and then maybe even follow up with some advice you could give fellow poets here at All Poetry?
I actually, at some point, I had a t-shirt made. Don't take it from me because you'll end up drunk. So I'm not sure whether I should give a lot of advice. What I would say drove me back to writing is, of course, inspiration. I'm going to say this. I like my life. I would not trade it for anything else in the world or anyone else's life for that matter. For me, I was busy living it, and I was not writing about it, you may say, even though I'm not writing that much about it, but I write about things which have touched me in a certain way. For me, it's important to live and read and write about things which make you feel alive. And every single time I write about something dark, it makes me feel more alive because I go, yes, let's go into the subject. Let's write about it. And then after the initial phase of, I really don't like this, when I go back for it and I warm to it, I'm like, yeah, okay, this is passable. But also, okay, this, if I had something in me, I've let it go. And this has made me feel better. And I guess this is one of the reasons I like to write darker things, is because it's like free therapy. You just, if there's something in you, you just leave it on the paper and you let it go, because that's what it's about. And if someone likes it and wants to read it, yeah, that's a plus. But for me, writing is something personal, which I just don't mind sharing with the world, but it is personal, and I need it to be for me. So if I have any advice for people or in the community, it would be write for yourself. I like writing in competition for competitions because they give me some direction. I usually don't adhere to the rules that much. I try to, but still, I like to take it out of bounds, see where I can bend them, because I need to make it my own in order to do it. So if you want to write and you have trouble, I would say try and feel it. And if you have too much things in your brain going around and you don't know what to write, a contest is great because it can focus your thoughts on a subject. But I would say don't write for the competition or the contest, just use it as something to channel your thoughts to a subject.
I really like that answer, and I think a lot of people have chimed in about the cathartic experience about writing poetry. So the fact that you're saying that you're putting it on paper and you're writing for yourself, I think is wonderful advice. Because of the format, and I like the fact that you say that you do it to live too, and I think I like the fact that you're doing it to express your feelings, and it's giving you that extra oomph. It's even I like how you said, okay, this is passable, and then you say how you hate your poetry, but then you come back and then you can accept it and love it and actually enjoy what you're presenting now. Do you ever feel like you go too far?
when you put something on paper and it's for yourself and it could be a very personal right, are you ever putting something on there and then regretting that you're sharing too much, or are you bold enough to just let it fly and let it be what it is and damn the torpedoes?
There are some more personal things, but in my opinion, if I've put it on paper, unless I burn it, people can read it. So why not just put it everywhere so that people can read it if they want to? I don't think that I've written on a subject that is too personal to me. I've always written things that I am willing or wanting to share with at least a person or two. And if you want to share it with a person or two, you can just share it with the world. And also, this is one of the reasons I'm writing under a moniker. If there's something that personal, people who know who I am in life and know my moniker as well are probably close enough that I don't have anything to hide from them. And for the people who don't know me in real life, I am shielded behind the moniker.
Very fair, and I think it's a great move. I really like that. And I like the boldness. I like that you have a free spirit because of that little device, that little mask that you can put on with the moniker here that we have on AP. It kind of gives you that level of separation, so you do have that extra level of freedom, I guess. So I think that's another great answer. I really like that. So if it is for yourself and you are able to put whatever on there, when you're putting this stuff down, even if it's for a contest, and I like how you framed that the contest should be used as an impetus to add inspiration, are you ever, does what the audience's reaction to your words, does that ever come into play? Or are you able to write totally autonomously for yourself, and then if they like it, they like it. If not, fuck them for not paying attention kind of thing.
I want to say that I don't care about it, for the most part, that's true, because as I said, I write for myself. But I enjoy when people like them, and it gives me a smile. And then if someone doesn't like it, that's fair. I have had comments like, you're talking about the world instead of yourself. Talk more about yourself and less about the world. And yeah, that's fair. That this is how that person would feel. But I am writing my things, and this is what I want to write. And some people like it, some people don't. If everyone likes what you're writing, it's not meaningful enough. So I'm okay with some people not liking it, and I think that's fair.
That's a great comment, because I think we could all get trapped in the fanboydom of making friends on the site and always trying to encourage people, but then you'll have to be careful about the sincerity of the words that you say. So, yeah, I agree with that. If you're always trying to write for someone else, or if someone's constantly praising you, then maybe there's a lack of sincerity in that. I think that's a fair statement on a lot of levels. All right, brother man, your next one, Nature's Sanctuary, is on the boards. Ready when you are.
Okay, this is going to be weird. Nature's Sanctuary, deep in the woods, dwelling tall and proud, a natural beauty like a cloud, a shroud, wildflowers bloom in hues and shades arrayed, nature's rainbow after the storm displayed. The trees stand guard, a verdant emerald embrace, a mother's warmth, a safe, tranquil space. Birds sing melodies, deer frolic and play, nature's symphony, a grand display. A hummingbird that hovers, wings a blur, a miniature chopper, an adventurer. Squirrel collects nuts, tail of fur, nature's treasure hunter, connoisseur. The abode blends in, a natural fit, like a glove knit, a perfect permit. A heaven of peace, tranquility radiates, a lullaby, where the soul rejuvenates. Inhaling fresh, pure air, my spirit repairs. Released from despair as nature kindly shares. A grand design in perfect harmony, a puzzle piece in nature's symphony. My spirit thrives in nature's sweet embrace. New life arises like a seed that knows its place. My soul at peace, my heart alive, like a butterfly taking a dive. With gratitude I embrace this delight, a treasure, a sight so radiant and bright. a reminder of my place in nature's grand scheme, a gift, a blessing, like a beautiful dream. End poem.
Now, believe it or not, Headliner fans, that buttery voice we've been looking at, listening to, enjoying all night does work for Bambi poems as well. That was beautiful. This doesn't have a dark feel, and your tone, your baritone voice, your presentation of poems, it's magical. It's magical regardless of what the topic is. And I'm glad we got to this one that has a totally different feel than a lot of the stuff we've been listening to tonight. And I was anxious to hear how it would come across. I'm very pleasantly surprised. And I kind of want to I want to hear why you wanted to include this one, because it does deviate from a lot of the dystopia, a lot of the darkness that we've been talking about earlier.
Well, I wanted to include it because I wanted to push myself. This is definitely not my usual style of writing, nor style of reading. And I love nature, and I love being in it. I would just, even now, but also when I was younger, just go into the mountains, sit on a tree, get a book out, read, pass the day, get back at the evening, have like a burnt face from all the sun, but no one cares because it's nature and it's awesome and it's actually rejuvenating. And in a world where we are mostly in the cities or in the houses and enclosed spaces, and even after a couple of years of isolation, nature is something that is just majestic. It always was. We just don't always see it like that.
Fair enough. No, great take. Go ahead, Pam, your thoughts.
Yeah, I really enjoyed and appreciated this one. And I do remember thinking the first time that I read this that it was something different than what Archdoom has presented to me before in other of my contests or for other LNP shows. And so I really appreciated that. It has wonderful imagery. It's really, to me, shows such a reverence for nature. Oh, and I have to tell you, Jeremy, if you think hearing his voice is wonderful tonight, you should hear the ladies react to when he makes a SoundCloud for Wednesday's Art of Seduction shows. They're like all fanning themselves and going, oh, my goodness.
You know how I feel about the Art of Seduction show. I'll try to listen in.
Oh, yeah. You have to listen sometime just to listen to all the ladies just trip over voices and stuff. It's we just make fools of ourselves. It's so much fun. But anyways, I like this write. It makes me smile. I like how there's a respect, as I said, a reverence for nature. It is something different that you've brought. And so you've proven yourself as being a very versatile poet. The lines that made me smile the most was, a hummingbird hovers, wings a blur, a miniature chopper, an adventurer, squirrel collects nuts, tail a fur, nature's treasure hunter, connoisseur. Those imageries right there remind me so much of a Beatrice Potter. I used to love reading Beatrix Potter when I was a kid, and how she personified animals, and she had, like, you know, Peter Rabbit and the tale of Squirrel Nutkin, you know, and I like that. But I also really like where you say, my spirit thrives in nature's sweet embrace, new life arises like a seed that knows its place, my soul at peace, my heart alive, like a butterfly taking a dive. Yeah, you know, I like how those lines are very meditative and reflect on the idea, you know, that you can find peace within nature. You know, I think this is beautifully written. And I'm trying to think of a particular question for it, but I do apologize. It's, at the end of the night, my brain kind of just starts going. So, but I do think it's a wonderful write.
Thank you very much. I I like it because it pushed me, because that's not what I usually write about. But I had fun with it, because when you imagine someone, they're usually either a seaside person or a mountain person. And I myself am more of a mountains person, and I feel at home there. And I love being between all in the midst of all the trees, just a small hut there, and hearing all the birds, and it's just very, very nice. Which is also weird because I'm allergic to nature a lot of times. We can say that there's a darkness in there. But I think you pinpointed the two of the stanzas very well. My third favorite stanza, I would say, is inhaling fresh, pure air, my spirit repairs, released from despair as nature kindly shares a grand design and perfect harmony, a little piece in nature's symphony. Because it makes you look at the big picture, and where you are is just a part of it, a part of the entire world. And it's a really beautiful puzzle piece, and I think everyone would be glad to be in that puzzle piece.
Absolutely. Well said there.
I love it. Okay, my friend, I think we're ready to spice it up a bit. You got your adult poem, Twisted Passion, up. Ready when you are.
Okay, Twisted Passion. Kneeling at love's temple before your feet, worshipper of your sexual creed, complete. Your power over me, firm, intense. I'm a puppet in your hands, lost in suspense. Gaze ablaze with an infernal light. As you weave your spell, I'm lost in delight. Lips, a siren's call, they sing. I'm lost in your allure, mind takes wing. In your embrace I find sanctuary, lost in the rapture of your dark monastery. A love, a twisted work of art, canvas of lust, painted with a wicked heart. You're a goddess of shadows, queen of the night, a seductress whose every move is pure delight. In the darkness you reign supreme, and I'm a worshipper of your erotic dream. Your sexual creed, a force to be reckoned, a power that leaves me shaken and awakened. The mistress of my deepest desires, with your slave lost in the fires. At love's altar, I kneel before you. My dark obsession, my sweet taboo. A love, a waltz of chaos and desire. We dance with death as flames grow higher. Masterful conductor, you lead the way. In your arms, I sway and obey. Twisted tango, our bodies entwine. A union of pleasure and pain divine. End poem.
I know you're quaking at the knees. You get to go first. Go ahead, Tammy.
Yes, I am. I am definitely quaking at the knees, but I thought that was a wonderful read and just a beautiful, sensual write. I like how this speaks on knowing the sensual power of your woman or any woman for that matter. You know, and dark sensuality. I love running dark sensuality contests. I love reading dark sensuality poetry when it's good, and this one is, because it's something that needs balance. And I realize everybody has different things that they're into. My general rule when it comes to dark sensuality is I will be completely offended if it's, you know, it has to be two or more consenting adults. You know, I don't want the dark sensuality that goes into something horrific like rape or, you know, other just not discussable things. But you find that balance, and you create it, and you really speak to me on a lust and love and admiration and a knowledge of a sensual power. Especially, you're a goddess of shadows, queen of the night, a seductress whose every move is pure delight. In the darkness, you reign supreme, and I'm a worshiper of your erotic dream. Now, you know, sensual poetry is something I like to tease Jeremy about because he does get easily embarrassed. But I totally get where he comes from when he says, you know, it's not easy. It's really not easy because people cross this line that doesn't need to be crossed because there should be something left to the reader's imagination. And so I'm going to bring you in on that discussion. And to you personally, what makes for good sensual poetry?
Well, first of all, there is a fine line between sensuality and pornography, in my opinion. And I don't want to cross that line. I mean, we're all grown consenting adults. We can do whatever we want. But when you're putting it on paper and when you're doing it either to get it out into the world or even writing for yourself, it, to me, is important that you can show it to someone if you want to and not be like, okay, what did I write? Why did I write this? So I like to write things for me, but I am also a hopeless romantic. And for me, passion and even sexuality, if I'm writing about it, I am making it more about love than sexual. And that, I think, may actually help me to write more balanced works. But to me, it's just that. You just need to write it, write what you think, but don't get too vulgar with it. Like, vulgarity is weird. To me, And not in the sense of speaking, like dropping F-bombs and things like that. Vulgarity as in talking about what you're actually doing with another person. This you can leave to the imagination, and it actually draws the reader in my opinion, more than if you just put it all on the piece of paper. And for me, it's also that effect. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Because, you know, I never want to read a sensual poem where it feels like I just picked up a pamphlet from the gynecologist's office. You know, it's so.
Oh, and you know, this is hard for me to talk about, but there is a place. I mean, there is a place for pornography, in my opinion. I think there is. I mean, look at the popularity of 50 Shades of Grey or anything else that has that's very steamy romantic or even pornographic rights. I think there's a place. Why I like everything that you guys are just talking about, Pam's point and your counterpoint, Archdoom, is by allowing the reader to use their imagination with words like this. And I think you set the bar, you put the line in a perfectly comfortable place for a sissy reader like me that blushes anytime anything gets steamy. But by letting the reader, respecting the reader even, and that's what their imagination take place, lets the poem live on. Because I could come back to this poem in different moods and have different takes on it and let my mind fill in or celebrate that act of passion, romance, to the level that's comfortable for me. And that could change, like I just said, with each read. If it's something that's black and white from the guy gynecologist's office, there's not much beyond the first pass or even the second grimy pass through it. It's always going to be the same. And you're always going to have to be in a specific mood to appreciate it if it's so spelled out. So, yeah, no, I think there's a place for it. I can see how it works. And I guess my question for all of this, you said in your writing of your book and then writing, taking up poetry to get the ladies – how often have you, or can you just tell us an anecdote or a story about when you wrote for a specific person or an audience and then were able to present them with the poem and the positive or even maybe negative reaction you've gotten from that kind of experience?
Well, the entire first book is actually written for a single person, and that got a big reaction, and a lot of it was very positive. And it's actually kind of weird because not all of the works in there are mine. I might be wrong on this, but if I remember correctly, there are 71 pieces in there. And everything but the second to last is mine, but the second to last is by that person who it was written for. I asked for consent. I got it. I was told, do with it as you please. It is written for you, so it is yours. And I love that. And a lot of it is actually somewhat also crossing, some of it is also crossing that line between sensuality and pornography for me. There is a lot of F-bombs, and it's definitely an 18-plus read. So if anyone who is under 18 is still up and listening, I do not think it's a good read for them. This is one of the it's a piece, but it's an entire book, so I'm just going to call it a piece. But it's one of the pieces that I've written for a particular person. It got tears in their eyes. It was amazing as a feeling. And that is what actually inspired me to go on and continue writing after 5 or 6 years taking a break.
Well, Archduke, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate you getting up early, and I know you had a little bit of the jitters, but you performed like a champ. I appreciate you spending an entire two-hour session with us. It was a joy. You've made a
thank you.
Fan
it was
out
lovely.
You. Yeah, you've definitely made a deeper fan out of me with your ability to perform your poetry, and I love all of your insight and your ability to share with us. It's been a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure for me as well.
Alrighty, and so for Jeremy F. and Pam Ray and Archdoom DeVille, thank you, everybody, and have a lovely evening.